Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 6 of Season 4 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan rom-com When Harry Met Sally, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is my good friend Nick Rehack of French Toast Sunday. Welcome back to the show for this season, Nick.
Thank you for having me again, man. I really appreciate it.
Well, you were such a gracious host last time. You know, so I figured that you know, you didn't want to come visit me this time and sit on my couch. So, you know, we'll do it. We'll do it over the airwaves once again, you know, until one of us gets, you know, to the other one's continent.
That's true. I'll have to get it. I've yet to be to the other hemisphere. So I'll have to.
There you go. You can write about things that happen to other people.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, first I want to mention to everyone. I mean, yeah, you told me you'd never seen this movie before before I told you that this is what we're doing. So yeah. do you want to give your impressions now, or do you want to give it at the end of the week?
I can give it now if you'd like.
Whatever you prefer. It's up to you.
I'll give it now. I'm disappointed in myself that I have not seen it sooner because I absolutely loved just about every second of this movie.
Wow.
But I'm also glad that I saw it when I did because I feel like I'm mature enough and I have a much greater appreciation of it than had I watched it when I was younger.
Right. Okay. That's fair. That's very fair. And is it now considered, you know, a movie that you said, wow, I want to go rewatch this sometime?
Oh, I would absolutely rewatch this time and again.
All right. And did you get your wife to watch it with you?
I did not. Unfortunately, she was a little preoccupied.
She was gaming. There
she was. I didn't want to call her out, but you know she's been really big into Call of Duty lately. So
That's fine. Just you know. So at least now you have something to use for date night at some point. You know, say
that's
hey,
true.
Here's this movie that you know you've had, did you ask her if she'd ever seen it?
I feel like she said she saw it a while ago and then kind of just went right back to her gaming. I'm like, okay, well I'll be in the basement.
Hey, why not? If that works, if that's what works for you guys, that's great. All right, man. So episode 6 begins with Harry continuing to talk and spit, and ends with Harry beginning to explain his dark side. So we ended things on Friday with you know, Harry and Sally getting in the car and driving out of University of Chicago. We mentioned that they made the wrong turn, and today we get to see even more that they went the wrong way because, you know, we'll see where they're driving, which is not where one should be driving if they're leaving the city of Chicago. Obviously, I'm not from Chicago, so I don't know this, but a friend of mine who's from Chicago, you know, said to me when he heard I was doing this, he says, you got to talk about the fact that they're going the wrong way when they leave the University of Chicago. And I was like, what? Come on. They can't get something like that really wrong. And it turns out I did a little bit of research and they did. But we'll get there. We'll get there. So that, you know, the last thing we actually saw was, you know, Harry was spitting the grape pits into the window and then rolled it down without even, you know, even thinking that he needs to, you know, wipe off the window or something like that. All right. And, you know, he's in this minute just continues doing that. He's, you know, the window is opened and now he's just spitting out pits of those grapes that he brought. You know, I mean, I didn't mention this on Friday, but you would think that these grapes would have been squashed by the way that he just has like this duffel bag and, you know, and a laundry bag. You know, I don't really think there's anywhere he could have put those grapes that would have kept them safe.
No, not at all. They should have absolutely been squished. Are they still even fresh? How long have they been sitting out? I have a lot of questions about these grapes. And like you pointed out, you didn't wipe off the window. You just looked at it and went, oh, whoops, and then rolled it down.
Sorry, I'll roll down the window. You know, that's it.
Do you have a cup? Is it okay if I spit this out the window? Would you like some grapes?
No, he did offer her. He offered her
grapes. He did?
He okay, did. I'll and she said, and she said, and she said that she doesn't eat between meals. But I think she was being polite.
Right.
I think she was just being polite to, you know, saying, okay, that's gross and disgusting. I mean, we see that here in the first few seconds of this minute. You know, when he's spitting out the window, the look on her face is priceless. I mean, she is just shocked that someone would actually do that, because she's, you know, she's prim and proper. You know, she is someone who would be, you know, spitting them. Actually, I wouldn't even say spitting them. She would let them like fall out of her mouth onto her hand or into a tissue or something like that, or into a cup, yeah, as you mentioned.
While
you
looking know. Away and then like ditch it real quietly. Even no, though you I don't, know I don't
think,
happening.
But I don't think
like
she would do that. I don't think she would
you
do
don't
that.
Think?
No, not Sally. You know, it's like the type of thing, you know, that there's certain things that women don't do, you know, and that's it. And, you know, Sally is like that. There are women that do those things, but, you know, Sally is not. She, you know, come on, we'll get to the way she orders things later this week. So
that is true. That is true.
We do know that she does things in her own way.
Very but much so.
Spitting grapes is not one of them. And I can definitely say that. You know, and then Harry says to her, "So, why don't you tell me about the story of your life?" Now, I'm going to read through this whole conversation, and then we'll go back and pick through it as we go along, because, you know, it's a great it flows really well. You know, he goes, mm-hmm. "Why don't you tell me the story of your life?" And he goes, "The story of my life? Well, we got 18 hours to kill before we hit New York. The story of my life isn't even going to get us out of Chicago. I mean, nothing's happened to me yet. That's why I'm going to New York. So something will happen to you." "Yes." "Like what?" "Like I'm going to journalism school to become a reporter. So you can write about things that happen to other people." "That's one way to look at it. Suppose nothing happens to you. Suppose you lived out your whole life and nothing happens. You never met anybody. You never became anything. And finally you die in one of those New York deaths where nobody notices for 2 weeks until the smell drifts into the hallway." And then Sally looks at him and says, "Man, I mentioned you had a dark side." "That's what drew her to me." "Your dark side?" "Sure." "Why? Don't you have a dark side?" "No." "No, you're probably one of those cheerful people who dots their I's with little hearts." "I have just as much of a dark side as the next person." "Oh, really?" "When I buy a book, I always read the last page first. That way, in case I die before I finish, I know how it ends. That, my friend." And that's the end of the dialogue for this minute, because it gets cut off in the middle. So let's pick through the things that are said here. I mean, first of all, it's a great conversation. You know, it's written really well. I mean, Nora Ephron and Rob Reiner did a great job with the dialogue in this movie.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, very much. It all feels natural. It all flows really well, like you said.
Correct. The back and forth between the two of them is always amazing throughout the entire movie. And that is because of the script writing and because of the chemistry that the two of them have, even though, I mean, there's I think there's like a 15-year difference between the two of them, something like that. I did the math at some point. I'm trying to remember the age difference between them, but they're you know, they are not what you would call contemporaries, I guess you can say. You know, there is a slight age gap between them.
I didn't know that. I would have never guessed that, really.
Billy Crystal was born in 48 and Meg Ryan in 61, so it's a 13-year difference. But still, you know, it doesn't seem that way here. I mean, forget about the fact that he has this great toupee on him, you know, and that she has her Farrah Fawcett cut and stuff like that. But, you know, it does not look like there's 13 years between the two of them.
Not at all, no.
You know, in the script, I think there's a 5-year difference between the two of them. I think that, if I remember correctly, because apparently he has finished law school and she's just finishing her bachelor's, you know, so there is that difference between their, you know, their I guess, level of education that they're finishing, mm-hmm. you know, and stuff like that. So, I mean, the whole reason that Harry starts this conversation is, you know, he's finding a way to pass the time, you know, as they're driving along and he's spitting and stuff like that.
You know? Yeah, and it's not like, what brings you to New York? I'm from New York. Have you seen things in New York before? Let's talk New York or anything like that. It's just like, so tell me exactly the story of your life. Tell me everything about you. Let me see if I find you remotely interesting or if I'm going to have to do a lot of the legwork on this conversation.
Yeah, but I also think about the fact that, okay, if you know that you're going on a road trip with someone that you know don't know at all for 18 hours, okay, you're going to have to, you know, you're gonna have to think about what you're gonna do along that trip.
Yeah, I mean, a book, music, something like. What I don't understand is, and maybe it was discussed later on, and I missed it on the viewings that I've given it. Was there even a way or a conversation of like, oh yeah, my friend happens to be going that way. I'll hitch you two up, or I'll make sure you catch a ride with her. There was no conversation ahead of time like, hey, I hear we're going to ride to here. You know, do you have a preference on driving during the day or at night? Like, I've taken road trips before, and we hash out a lot of the stuff ahead of time. So in the beginning of the road trip, it's, hey, I'm excited to get to that place. Middle of the road trip, it's, hey, all these things that we've passed. And as we get closer to the road trip, it's, hey, remember all the stuff that we just did. So there's plenty of, like, logical steps to make. But if it's two strangers like this, you'd think there'd be at least some type of communication or at least something. But no, it's just – it's going in, like, completely dry.
Right.
And I find that so fascinating to begin with. But
right. My understanding – I don't think
you'd do something like this nowadays for sure.
Yeah. My understanding is that the idea was is that, okay – you know, Sally was driving and she was trying to find someone to go with her.
Mm.
And that's what it comes down to. And at that point, okay. she must have put up like a post somewhere in, you know, on a bulletin board in the school or something like that. And, you know, and then Harry answered it. But on the other hand, we know that she's friends with Amanda. So, so somehow, you know, through the grapevine, you know, they found out. But I think the idea is that, you know, Sally is the one who's planning the whole thing. But there's also personality. Sally's personality is to plan everything out. Harry's is, I'm just going to go with the flow.
That's true.
Because I'm probably going to die before I get to New York, so it doesn't matter. You know, that type of thing. That's his, you know, personality. You know, why plan ahead? Who knows if we're going to actually make it there? You know, I don't know.
No, that's a great way to look at it. I didn't think of it like that before. I mean, and he even kind of lets us in on that type of thing too by saying, I read the last page of a book before I even start it. For me, I read the last sentence, and that is a problem for sure, because it's like, why not just read it and then be found out at the end? But there's something about reading that last sentence and then, like, how do we get there?
Yeah, but if you read what I've, you know, after I've heard Harry say this so many times, I've seen this movie so many times, you know, I've sometimes gone in and looked at the last line of a book or something like that. And the truth is, if you don't know the characters and you don't know the story, the last line means nothing, or the last page or whatever it is. It means nothing to you because you don't know who these people are. You don't know how things got to this last page. You know, the last page could just be, you know, an epilogue or something like that. You know, it says, okay, so Sally got married to Harry in the end, or whatever it is. But it doesn't, it's, you know, I when I look at books, you know, I can't really see that reading the last page or the last sentence will help me get any type of understanding. You know, even if we go according to Harry's philosophy, that if you die along the way, then, you know, you'll at least know what happens. But I don't think you really do. That's my opinion. I don't think the last page sums up a book.
I think that's fair, because it's just the page of. It's just what's that character doing in that moment, or what's their last kind of thought.
Exactly.
But you don't know how it started. You don't know what happened during. Did the character change? Did they stay the same? I mean, obviously with these two characters, right now they're staying the same, sure, but we're going to see a lot of change in the coming minutes.
Correct.
But – you know, if you were to watch the last minute, is that going to tell you everything you need to know about the first minute?
Right.
Probably not, because it's credits, but.
Okay, that's true also. Yeah, you're very good with that one. Very good point.
but still, you know, it's not going to tell you, you know.
You know, like, even if you take a movie like Memento and you watch the last minute of Memento, that really won't tell you anything about what happened in the movie.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Things are completely different, but yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I found really interesting, I am listening as I do the research for each of these minutes. So I listen to the two commentary tracks on the DVD. All right. One of them has just Rob Reiner, and there's another one with Rob Reiner, Billy Crystal, and Nora Ephron together, all talking about the movie. You know, and I'm like listening to them in 5 minute segments. I've listened to them in the past, but, you know, just to refresh my memory and stuff like that. And one of the things that they say on the commentary with the three of them is that the idea of spitting the grapes was Billy Crystal's idea.
Really?
Apparently, when he was learning to drive, his grandfather was teaching him how to drive. And his grandfather used to, you know, spit things out the window as they were driving.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's like weirdly endearing.
Yes, completely.
And that would kind of be a thing that only he and I guess maybe close family would know, if they've driven with his grandfather before.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of sweet.
Yep. Now my biggest question is, okay, he starts off by saying, tell me the story of your life, instead of him telling his story. We never get to the point where he doesn't leave her an opening to say, okay, well, tell me your story. How did you get here? He's
Interesting.
interested in gathering information about her, but he still is keeping, he's holding his cards very closely.
Well, I think it's also, I bet it would be in his character to, if she asked about him, she's like, well, I already know about me. I want to know about you. Or some kind of like quasi smart line like that. I think that's how it would come off. I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, upon the first time seeing this, his whole performance and like delivery of his dialogue really reminded me of Charlie Sheen's character in Ferris Bueller's Day Off at the police station, where he's just kind of like throwing it out there real nonchalant like, but then every so often there might be one little sentence that's like kind of, I don't want to say prolific, but really is like it makes you think a little bit and kind of takes that step back of like, huh, that is a different way of looking at things. But just his whole demeanor, I'm like, this is, it's for me, it's not the usual Billy Crystal I'm used to seeing, so I wonder how his character would have grow and evolve, which again you see in the coming minutes or throughout the film. But I think it's just really cool to see Billy Crystal in this way, like at the start of a movie.
And the idea that she then also says that she has, that nothing has happened in her life. She's 21.
Yeah.
Do you mean to tell me that every 21-year-old in 1977 doesn't have anything that happened to them? It's
That's
very strange
no
that that's
summer
the way,
camps, nothing.
exactly, but that's strange that that's the way she looks at her life. She looks at her life that she hasn't accomplished anything.
Oh, interesting.
So
That's a very different way of looking at it. Because at least by the time I was 21, I'd went to Disney World once. I went to college for a little bit, all kinds of stories and stuff there. Like, see,
I had been in the
that's a story in
military,
itself. Like, hey, see, there you go.
I've been in the military. I was almost finished with my degree by the age of 21. I had things to talk about.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say they were necessarily profound things, but things that happened in my life. And
Yeah, they're
for her
still
to make
things.
such a blanket statement by saying that nothing has happened to me yet, and she's going to New York for something to happen. Like nothing can happen to you if you're in Chicago, but if you go to New York, then obviously, something can happen. We never find out where the two of them are actually from. Are they from Chicago, or they just happen to be, in University of Chicago? So,
That's true.
how did
That's
they get
true.
there and all that stuff? So, it's interesting to think about these type of things. And, I like the fact that they give us the hint here that, she's looking to study to be a journalist. Okay. This is never mentioned anywhere else in the movie. Later on, we don't hear about her, writing articles and going into, going to the newsroom or having to meet a deadline, for the newspaper or something like that. Nothing.
No.
In Sleepless in Seattle, yes, but not in this movie. Yeah.
I think there's one scene where she's typing, and then there's another throwaway line of like, oh, I work there, like talking about another media publication. But that's really, yeah, you're right. That's really it. And then with Billy Crystal, his character, political consultant and everything, we don't really see him doing much of anything
That's
on
correct.
the realm of political consulting, which I
That's right.
also found really
Yeah,
interesting.
which again we'll only find out in like 2 weeks what he actually does, but the script tells us that
Spoilers.
he's a lawyer. Which is even it's even funnier that he would study law. That this is his
Yeah.
personality. He's got a very dark side and still would study law. I don't know. But in the end he didn't go into it at the end.
Which, I mean, his character would make for a fascinating lawyer. I would love to hear his diatribes and,
Yes.
the statements he would give and the cross sections and the conversations with the judge and the jury and all that. I would love to see something like that.
Yes. I think he would get thrown out of court quite often.
Very quickly.
Yeah. So I did a little bit of research on journalism schools. Did you know that there are 109 accredited university and college programs that study journalism and mass communications right now?
What?
That's it.
109?
That's it. I would think that number would be much higher.
Really? I thought it would be lower, to be honest.
Really? Throughout the whole
Yeah.
US, 50
Throughout the whole
states,
US.
because there's what's known as the ACEJMC, the Accrediting Council of, on Education in Journalism and Mass Communication. And they have like nine standards of ways to evaluate the programs. And they have 109 university programs that are accredited towards them. Mm. Okay. Do you have any clue where the first journalism school was?
I feel like the easy answer is New York, but I want to say Philadelphia.
No, you gotta go further inward into the Midwest. It was the University of Missouri.
I would have never guessed
that. Neither would I.
Never. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Missouri. Okay.
And there are also only three graduate schools that are only journalism schools. So you have Columbia University has a graduate school of journalism. The Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism. I don't know where that one is.
Sure.
You've heard of it?
Maybe. No.
and the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism.
Okay. So I've heard of Berkeley and Columbia, but not the not that middle one.
Yeah. No, me neither.
Huh. Okay.
So, yeah. So I found that a little bit of interesting. And, you know, then he goes on and talks about the fact that, you know, she's going to end up basically dead. You know, they're going to find her dead in a, you know, in an apartment somewhere, you know. In New York, and they're going to find her like 2 weeks later. So I actually, that fascinated me to try and find that out. Do you know, again, this is the information I found. I don't know if it's factual or not. Okay. But how many people die in New York City every year? And of those, how many of them are people that live alone? Meaning what are the odds that those people who are living alone will be found dead?
I'm going to say, and maybe this is a little high, I'm going to say at least 3,000.
3,000 are found in their apartments, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Because they're alone or dead, nobody, you know what I mean? Like, hey, they've been gone for a little bit, and then they find them dead. Yeah, I'm going to say at least 3,000.
Okay, so the numbers I found, again, I don't know how factual this is, but I found that there are about 50,000 people who die in New York City every year.
What? Oh, okay. Across the board.
Okay. Across the board.
Okay.
Again, this is probably data pre-COVID, because I'm assuming post-COVID, those numbers are very different. Pre-COVID or not post.
Okay.
You know, no, and apparently there are about 1,500 people who die every year that are living alone.
Okay, so I'm not terribly far off.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's still a lot.
Yes,
I mean, yeah, New York has millions of people, but that's still a lot.
Yes, correct. Now, of those, 640 homeless people were found dead in 2021, and of those, 71 of those were found just dead in the streets, and 174 of them in shelters.
Well, I don't want to be that person, but honestly, I feel like that number's low. I really do. I mean, I hope that that number's wrong and it's actually a smaller amount than that, because then, you know, good for us, I think, for having a better handle on that type of care. But at the same time, like, that's so much.
Yeah.
That's so much.
Yeah. I mean, as I was doing research for this, I came across a huge article. This must have been like a 20-page article. And I actually sat and read the whole thing. It was the story of basically a guy who was found dead in his apartment, and they just talked about, you know, nobody knew who he was, and like the different people whose jobs were to try to find out this information as to who he was. And they ended up, it took them like 5 or 6 months till they actually found out who he was and who his beneficiaries were and things like that. It was a fascinating article. It really was. It's sad.
5 to 6 months. Oh,
yes. They couldn't bury him till then.
Really?
He was sitting, you know, in the morgue somewhere for the entire time. But they talked about, you know, the people whose jobs are to go and clean out these apartments and to go appraise the things that are in the apartment and, you know, find out how much the estate is worth and pay off any debts and, you know, And I mean, it was really a fascinating article, I gotta say.
I'm gonna have to get you to send that to me because that's as much of a bummer as that is, that's really something that not a lot of people think about.
Yes, for sure. I'll have to I'll mark that down to find that. I now have to go find it again, and then I'll send it to you. But it really was fascinating. There's no
I'll
question
just
about
have
that.
to read it on a not cold and gray day.
I
I'll wait
mean,
for a bright, sunny day.
no, I mean it's first of all, it's very interesting that we're talking about this right now because unfortunately, less than a week ago, at the time of this recording, a friend of my wife's was actually found dead in her apartment. You know, and it was just like nobody knows what happened to her. They don't know how, you know, how it happened and stuff like
What?
that. Yeah. It was just crazy. You know, this 45-year-old woman who just, you know, wasn't answering the phone. And I mean, she wasn't found dead a few weeks later. She was found dead the day after, but still, it's a crazy story.
We
Crazy.
had a very unfortunate situation in the family where we couldn't get a hold of a relative, and I guess people kind of dragged their feet in going to find this person, and they had passed, but it had been nearly a week until they went to physically find the person, and it was not a great scene, but it's definitely it's you just you hate to see it happen.
Yeah. Well,
You hate to see it
not to
happen.
continue with the morbidity of this, but you just reminded me about 5 or 6 years ago, a cousin of my mother's who he was, you know, in his late 60s or whatever, living on his own. He didn't show up to work one day and, you know, everyone was wondering about it and they went to his apartment and they ended up finding him, you know, that he passed away over the weekend. And the craziest thing about that story is that on the table next to him was his will. Okay.
What?
But
No,
you want to hear something even
no.
crazier though. Okay,
You can't get crazier.
you can. This the this must have happened maybe in 2016, 2017, whatever it was. I don't remember exactly when it happened. Okay, but the will was from 1976. Okay, he hadn't updated it. My father, who passed away in 1977, was the executor of this will. Okay, so 40 years after my father passed away, this other guy died, and his will, you know, he named someone the executor who had died 40 years earlier, and he never had updated
Wow.
it. And the will was just sitting next to him as he was slumped over at the table or whatever it was. You know, again, crazy stories. But we probably should get back to talking about fun things about Harry Manzelli, and not an unfortunate story. I think we're becoming Harry. We're just, you know, we're talking about morbid things here. We're looking at the
Yeah,
dark
I'm just
side.
going to start spitting grapes at my monitor.
There you go.
Or grape pits,
Don't
excuse
worry. They won't reach you. They won't reach you.
me.
I guarantee you that. All right.
And that always threw me off that it didn't, like I said, hit the camera. I hit the rig when he was spitting them out. I guess he just had the perfect spot and the perfect aim for him every
Yeah,
time.
completely. Well, that's Billy Crystal for you.
Also the magic of Hollywood.
Yes. That is true, but it turns out that I guess Rob Reiner likes to have spitting in his movies because, you know, in Stand By Me, they were spitting, you know.
Yeah, but they were kids. Like, that's
No,
always
I know
the.
that, but you know, but you just reminded me of it because River Phoenix was like spitting through his fingers, you know, like he made an O with his finger, like the OK sign, and he spat through that,
Oh, yeah, that's right. He did
you
do
know. And he
that.
said, you know, where he goes, Chris Chambers never misses, even when the ladies leave the seat down, you know, that type of thing. And then we see a shot of them driving towards downtown Chicago. And this is what I was talking about earlier. They shouldn't be going to downtown.
See, I thought that, but in my mind, I'm like, you know what? Maybe it's one of those things where it's like University of Chicago, but it's just kind of like just outside the city, and they have to drive through the city in order to get like away from it. But then the more I think about it, I'm like, no, why would they call it that if it wasn't in the city itself? So that always it throws me off when I see it. I'm
Yes,
like, ugh.
they should not be driving towards that. And you know, we can see in the distance one of the you know the famous landmark of Chicago, which everyone calls the Sears Tower, even though I just found out that it's no longer called the Sears Tower. It's called the Willis Tower. Did you know they changed the name?
I knew they had changed the name, but I couldn't remember to what.
Right. Okay. So
But I will
it,
still call it the Sears Tower
yeah, for
out of
sure. Me too.
ignorance.
Me too. So it's a 108-story building that is 442.3 meters high. You know, which is pretty high.
And it was the first, was it the first skyscraper in the U.S. or one of the
No, no,
first?
no, no, no. In 1973, it became the world's tallest building. And
That's what it was.
it held that title for 25 years. As of now, it is the third tallest building in the Western Hemisphere, and it is the 23rd tallest building in the world.
Because the tallest building in the world is the Burj Khalifa.
I believe so, but every year that changes because they keep making
Because
bigger and
everybody
bigger
keeps putting
buildings.
them spires and the needles on it, and
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
cheaters. Bunch of cheaters.
That's right. Apparently, 1.7 million people visit the observation deck, which the observation deck is the highest in the U.S. Okay, it may be the third tallest building, but the observation desk is the highest.
Really?
Yes.
The highest in a skyscraper or just highest observation deck?
It is the highest observation deck. You're right. Okay, that's right. No, meaning that, for instance, the observation deck on the Empire State Building is not as high as the one in the Willis Building.
Interesting. Because I would assumed. Because, well, now we're just getting into the weeds of it, but I would assume, like, because there's an observation deck at Pikes Peak, and that's the tallest point in the U continental U.S. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but that just seems crazy to me that it wouldn't be the Empire built or even the new One World Trade Center they just built, not just built, but the newer Trade Center tower they just built. That's okay, interesting. I wonder why. I wonder why.
Don't know. You can keep wondering because I don't know the answer. Anyone out there who knows the answer can let us know. In June 2006, there were seven men that were arrested by the FBI who were trying to blow up the tower, and they ended up convicting five of them, and two of them were acquitted. The biggest, the largest tenant in the building at the time, Ernst & Young, decided to move their offices out of that building a few years later because they were scared that something was going to happen in the building.
Yeah, I don't blame them. I really don't blame them. Or is that the one where you can, like, they have boxes built into the side of the building where you walk out and you literally look straight down because you're standing on glass? Is that the one?
I don't know. I think I was there once, but it was decades ago. I think I was there in 1989, something like that. 89, 90, something like that.
Never been to Chicago. I got to get out there.
In the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off, they're actually in the observ they're they go to the to actually at the time it was still called the Sears Tower, so they spend some time there.
Yeah, because they're like leaning their heads up against the glass and looking down and everything.
Yes.
Look at us keep bringing it back to Ferris Bueller's. That's twice in this episode now.
What else are we talking about, Ferris Bueller?
When I talked about Charlie Sheen or Billy
Oh, you're right,
Crystal's
right, right, right.
performance,
You see,
and my mind went
it
to.
was a half hour ago. I forgot about that. You're right, Charlie Sheen. There you You're right. You're right. You got me on that one. There you go. The Willis Tower appears in the movie The Dark Knight as part of Gotham City. It's in Transformers: Dark of the Moon in a few scenes. It's in Man of Steel. Apparently,
Oh,
the
yeah.
Daily Planet is located in the Sears Tower, or the Willis Building, or whatever it's called in the Man of Steel universe. I don't know.
Interesting, because I always thought Gotham was Gotham based off of New York and Metropolis, Chicago, or was Gotham based off of Chicago and Metropolis, New York?
I don't know. I never was able to figure that out because they always said that Metropolis was not far from, it was a few hours from Smallville, and that like apparently Metropolis was supposedly in Kansas somewhere. I don't know. I think it depends on what iteration of comics you're thinking of because they probably changed it of where it's supposed to be.
That's true. Yeah.
I always thought that Gotham was New York for sure, but apparently, if you ask Christopher Nolan, it's Chicago. So I don't know. Don't know. And then there's another building that you can actually read the. Did you look at the buildings that were there by any chance, or not really?
And where?
No, when we see the shot of Chicago.
Oh,
of
we're actually
downtown.
talking about the movie again.
Yeah, we're back to an Harry Miss Sally. We're not talking about Ferris Bueller. We're not talking about The Dark Knight.
The only one I see is the Sears Tower.
Okay, so there's another one that you can actually see that it's right in front of the Sears Tower, and you can see the words Playboy on it. Okay, so it is the Playboy Building.
What?
Yes, which is a 37-story building that was completed in 1929, and it originally was the home of the Colgate-Palmolive Peat Corporation.
Hmm.
Okay, and it was originally called the Palmolive Building. In 1965, Hugh Hefner took it over, and they renamed the building. They renamed the building the Playboy Building. Right, and it was the home to the editorial and business offices of Playboy magazine from 1965 until 1989. When they moved their offices to Lakeshore Drive in Chicago. Okay, they sold the lease in 1980, and then they signed a 10-year lease for themselves that they continued there until 1990. And then the building was renamed, and it was renamed they renamed the building 919 North Michigan Avenue. You know, very, very original name for a building.
It's kind of boring. I'm not gonna lie.
You go from Palmolive to Playboy to 919 Michigan Avenue.
I don't like it.
Okay, but at the time,
just kept it traditional.
That's right. But at the time, and we can still see it in the movie. So they had the letters spelling out Playboy that were 9-foot letters. That were illuminated on both the north and south roof line. Okay, it was designated as a Chicago landmark in 2000, and it was added to the Federal National Register of Historic Places in 2003.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
In 2001, it was sold to someone else, and they decided to rename it, and they named it the Palmolive Building again. So.
Okay.
Yeah, and it actually became a residential address. And Vince Vaughn actually owns a triplex penthouse that encompasses the 35th, 6th, and 7th floors of the building. And apparently his house, apartment, is estimated at $12 million.
Oh, my God. Well, he is a big Chicago guy.
Yeah.
So it does make sense.
Yeah. And he tried selling it in 2013 for $25 million and decided to divide it into two units. And he sold one for 8.5 and the other one for 4.2. So
he kind of broke even.
Yeah, more or less. I guess he was a little scrapping for some cash.
Still, that's a triplex, 3 floors.
Yes.
I don't even have that much stuff for a floor.
Yeah.
I think, at least.
That's right. So part of the conversation that Harry and Sally have here is, you know, he's basically saying that there are two types of people. There's only people who have a dark side and people who are cheerful. Would you agree with that? I mean, that's a very simplistic way of looking at people. By saying that you're either black or white.
It's too simplistic.
Yeah.
No. Everything's gray. Right. I don't think anything truly, unless you're a light switch. Well, even then, because you can be a dimmer switch.
Right. There you go.
There truly is. Rarely is there a hard yes or no anymore. Or one or the other. It's which is great. I'm all for, you know, but it's just, it's all gray. It's all gray.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, he also mentioned the fact, you know, that there are people who, he said, you're probably one of those people who dots their I's with a heart. Now, do you know what that's called?
With the name of it's not just dotting an I with a heart.
The dotting of an I has a name.
Oh, I do not know what that's called.
It's called a tittle. TITTLE, or sometimes known as a superscript dot. Okay, huh. Most people don't refer to it as a tittle.
They just call it a dot.
They just call it a dot. Exactly. Do you dot your eyes? But yeah, so it's and obviously depending on the language, there are different languages that use different superscripts and things like that. But no, I just thought it was funny that there's actually a name for it. You know, it's not something I ever would have thought of.
Yeah, like I would, like you said, I would just call it a dot.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard the phrase, dotting one's I's and crossing one's T's.
Mm-hmm. But I've heard that.
That just means, finishing things up properly and stuff like that.
Yeah, detail oriented. Make sure it's all square and what it's supposed to
exactly.
be.
Exactly. And what's really funny is that he says to her, when she's being defensive and she says, "I have just as much of a dark side as the next person," why does she even care to try to, is it a positive thing to have a dark side?
I don't know. I mean, I think in a weird way, yes, because I feel like you do have to have a little bit of one in order to have the other, right? Like, I don't think anything could truly be 100% of something. There has to be a little bit of balance, even if it's very off balance and it's the scales are, very much leaning one way more than the other. I think there's definitely a little bit of both there.
Right. Okay. That's fair. And the last thing I want to say about the dialogue here is I love how he calls her my friend. At the end, he goes, "That, my friend." They've been driving together 20 minutes. it's a strange phrase to call someone my friend at that point.
Yeah, you don't really – I don't even hear that a whole lot nowadays anymore.
No, I don't really hear it that much anymore. Don't know. All right, is there anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
No.
All right, so the script has a few discrepancies here. Not that many, but there are some. So first of all, the minute would start off, if we went according to the script, by saying, "I hope this is going to be one of those trips with a lot of long, awkward silences." And then Sally says, "Me too." And then it says, "A long, awkward silence."
Classic.
And then he starts off with, "Tell me the story of your life." After Harry gives his whole diatribe about the death in New York one, so then it says in the script, it says, Sally looks over at Harry. "Who am I stuck in this car with?" And she just looks back at the road. She's a little shocked. And the only other difference is that Harry says, "That way, if I die before I finish it, I know how it comes out," instead of "I know how it ends." But it doesn't make a difference. That's just a small little nuance, that it doesn't make a difference either way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Great. So every Monday we have a segment called Meg Ryan Monday, where my guests will give their top five Meg Ryan performances. So Nick, what have you got for us? Start with your number five and work your way up.
Number five, Proof of Life. It's a film I've seen recently, and she smokes a whole lot in that movie. Everybody does.
Well, because she was cheating on her husband at the time, so what do you expect?
That's true. Yeah, you're not wrong. Number four, classic, Sleepless in Seattle. Number three is Anastasia, the wife, huge fan of that movie, and early on when we were dating –
they have that on Call of Duty? Like, I didn't know they had Anastasia or Call of Duty.
You can hear it in the background of the TVs before you blow up the houses that it's in. that's cruel. No, she was a really big fan of it growing up, and every so often she would throw it on, and I really have never seen it, despite me being a big Don Bluth fan. And she's like, watch this. So I've started watching it more and more, and I can appreciate it and dig it for what it is. Number two is You've Got Mail. Big fan of that. I'm not exactly sure why, but I really, really like that movie. And then, believe it or not, number one, When Harry Met Sally.
Wow. Like
this movie really did it for me. I don't know what it was, but when I saw the top five, I'm like, I know what number one is now. Like, it was really, really easy to make that distinction.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right, great. So, Nick, do you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me over on Twitter at the Rehack, T-H-E-R-E-H-A-K. That is, as this episode comes out, if it is still in existence. Keep an eye out on the distance for new episodes of Rehack Radio over at Mixcloud.com. And as always, I'm on episodes of The Lambcast, Movies, Films, and Flicks, and Exploding Helicopter.
All right. And Movie Room Minute.
That too. How could I forget?
But anyone listening to this knows that, so that's okay.
That's true.
And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. So until tomorrow, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having.
Gave me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful you. Had to be you.